recognize that we're one senator short. If we do not have a quorum, however, we can still have proceed with the public hearing, which we will do, and I'm sure we'll be joined by at least one more senator, if not two more. So today, colleagues, everyone we're hearing, we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 5007 and House Bill 5008, State Board of Clinical Social Workers, and including that, and HB 5008 is a fee bill for the State Board of Clinical Social Workers. We're going to do a public hearing for both of those bills at the same time. So without further delay, I'm going to call, open up the public hearing on House Bill 5007 and 5008 and call, John Langenwalter, the Administrator of the State Board of Clinical Social Workers, and the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, Chair Galizio, Vice Chair Devlin, members of the Education Subcommittee. I'm John Langenwalter, the Administrator for the State Board of Clinical Social Workers. With me today is Sean Range, the Budget Analyst from DAS that connects with the Board. A little over a week ago, hopefully you received your governor's recommended budget, but the document I'm going to invite you to look most closely at today is the Notebook of Budget Hearing Handouts, which you've also already received. We'll be going through that primarily. What I did with the hearing handouts is take the information that you requested, the four different levels of information you requested, and took it out of the regular budget and put it into that format so it would make more sense to what you requested. So we'll go across the key budget issues and drivers. Second, we'll go across the performance measures. Third, we'll look at the programs and services provided by the board. And then we'll look at the policy packages. There are 19 pages of basic outline in the handout. My intention is to get through that in about 20 minutes. If you have questions along the way, please don't hesitate to ask, and certainly there will be time for questions at the end. With your permission, Chair, I will go ahead.
Please proceed.
And would invite you to look at page one, which gives you the board composition, and you'll notice that six of the seven board members are from the Portland-Eugene corridor, and one is from Canton. We are very grateful for that person with the rural Oregon perspective. In terms of diversity, five of the board members are female and two are male. Five are white, one is African-American, and one is Hispanic. You'll notice on page two the basic mission of the board and the various components that the board and the staff use to implement its overall program and mission of public protection. On page three, we get into budget fund. And our primary budget driver this year is the request for a 0.5 full-time equivalent office specialist one addition to the staff limitation. That's driven primarily by the increase in licensee base. You'll notice at the top of the page are the licensing numbers for April 1 of 04, 05, and 06. In 04 to 05, we grew by 50 people. In 05 to 06, we grew by 37. Both of those years were significantly below the normal average of 91 since the board was started in 1979. But then you'll notice in the last 9.5 months since this past April, we've grown by 178, which is significantly over the 91. This is related directly to Oregon's economic fortunes at those particular times, and with the recovery of the economy, agencies are now hiring more social workers, and they're coming under the board's licensure. And thus, there's increased workload and need for additional staff. You'll also notice in bullet one on that same page that we are spending more on temporary hire help than we have in the past, and by hiring a half-time person, that will be able to reduce that significantly. The third bullet is also troublesome. If you'll notice, one of our employees, a half-time administrative specialist two position, currently has 356 hours of vacation and compensatory time on the record. She's at risk of losing additional vacation time as it comes up. She does have plans to start taking some. My hope is that she does not ask for the full 18 weeks that are her due at the same time, you know, because that wouldn't work for us at all, and she knows that, and she won't. But it is important that we honor those needs for vacation. Page 4. Another key budget driver is the transition to the birth month renewal process. Just a very brief history. When the board was formed in 1979, like most health licensing boards, we decided everybody renews at the same time. And for us, we set it December 31st. Okay? We've been that way for most of the board's history. In 2001, the legislature looked at that and requested that the board and DAS do a study to see if there wasn't a more time-effective way of doing that, and mentioned birth month renewal in particular, which many other boards are using. We did that study and came to 2005 legislature with that request, and that request was granted. So we have transitioned into the birth month renewal. There's a couple of glitches along the way that we now realize need to be taken care of, and we'll be hearing about those in a few minutes in policy packages 106, 7, and 8. There are a couple of things about the licensee renewal fee and initial renewal fee that in retrospect are sort of complex and confusing to people and spend a lot of staff time, and so we're going to ask you to help us clean that up administratively. Page 5. Two other board issues that have minimal impact on the 7-9 budget. We do want to give a belated thank you to the 2005 legislature for including our agency, along with a list of others, in the National FBI Fingerprint Background Check legislation. We are prepared this summer to enact the rules necessary to implement that. We are going to be using the excellent work done by my colleague Dave McTeague and the Board of Chiropractic Practitioner Examiners, who have already implemented those rules, and they'll work pretty much for us, too. We're anticipating this will not have much impact on staff involvement with the addition of the half-time FTE that we've requested. We're also hoping in the next year or two to move to an online application and renewal process. Our computer contracted person, is working with both DAS and the Treasury to try and find an interface that works with our particular very effective database program and the financial sector as well. On page 6, talking about the Public Protection Practice Act, please understand that this is not, and I repeat, this is not an act that is in front of you for consideration as legislature this time around. I would invite you to look at the timeline on the bottom of that page and understand that last fall, the board, having worked on this Practice Act concept for over 3 years, did take it to legislative council and had it drafted as an act. But we have not forwarded that act for your perusal at this time. We still have some additional work we need to do with other agencies and other stakeholders around the state. Our hope is to bring that to your attention either in your special session in 2008, if you have one, or certainly the regular 2009 session. But you need to be aware, just in terms of a heads up, of the budgetary implications it's already had and will have in the future. The whole concept for the act is based on the middle of that top sentence, the purpose of the act, where it says consumers can depend on the competence of the practitioner. That is the basic byline for all health-related licensing boards, is public protection. I'd invite you now in your budget binder to turn to Appendix A, please, which lists Oregon's health-related licensing boards. And you'll notice that there are 23 health-related licensing boards currently in the state of Oregon. 21 of those boards, by statute, have the ability not only to cover the title of the person that's doing that, but also the practice that they're doing. I'm not only a dentist, but I'm doing dentistry. There are two boards that don't have that, that only have title protection: licensed clinical social workers and licensed board of licensed professional counselors and therapists. In those two cases, we only protect the title. So somebody that's wanting to call themselves and work as a licensed clinical social worker does come underneath the board's jurisdiction, but by the board's best estimate, over half of the people providing social work professional practices in the state of Oregon, and thus over half the Oregonians getting social work professional practice, are receiving practice from people who are not underneath the board's jurisdiction at all, and thus are not held accountable to the board's code of ethics and the state's design for ethical practice. Obviously, we're not ready to bring that bill forward at this time, as I said, but we think the time is really close for the Legislative Assembly to have that kind of very important policy package discussion, or is it time now to close that gap in public protection so that all Oregonians, no matter what kind of health services they're seeking in the state, are protected by the state for ethical and appropriate practice. On page 7, we get into the performance measures, and you'll notice that with our first performance measure, where we try and resolve complaints within 6 months of when they are received in the board office, we did not meet that goal for this year. And in fact, if you look back over the last 8 years, there's only been 1 year that we have exceeded our goal. Like all, I suspect, most of the other health licensing professional boards, this board runs into the conflict between being timely, trying to resolve complaints in a timely fashion, and being thorough and fair. At Ms. Manthey's suggestion, I did some additional computations, and you'll notice those on the bottom half of that page. I'm looking at the statistics for 2004 and 5 and 6. And in each year, at least three-quarters of the cases we did resolve in less than 6 months, and in fact, significantly less. You'll see 2.7 months, 2.9 months, and 3.6 months for most of the complaints. But in every year, there's five or six complaints that are much more involved and complex that just seriously take a lot more time. And the board is going to keep on spending that time because they are always going to be more err on the caution of thoroughness and fairness rather than, gee, let's get this out the door within 6 months. On page 8, you'll see that we exceeded our goal for the CE reviews, and I'm very glad for that. On page 9, the third performance measure is a performance measure where the board is in attempting to take public action on not more than 0.1% of its licensee base in a year. This is a rather unique performance measure from what I understand, both here in the state and in talking to my colleagues in the social work profession across the country. I'm not aware of very many other, if any other, boards that have this kind of performance measure. 2 years ago, the board requested this performance measure of the legislature, and you approved it. Our intent at that time, and it's still our intent, is to look at being not only reactive in terms of consumer protection. We get a complaint in, we react to that and resolve it, but to start being more proactive and define for the licensees what is best practice in various areas of social work. I would invite you at your leisure to look at Appendix B, which includes a child custody guideline study or paper that the board worked with the National Association of Social Work Oregon chapter over the last couple of years to develop that guideline. Before then, there's people out there, social workers out there, doing these child custody guidelines, but with no guidelines in terms of, yeah, I've got to do A, B, and C, and D, or I don't have to do A, B, and C, and D, but now there is. So the board is slowly trying to develop what is really best practice, what do we expect the practitioner to be doing out there in the field, provide that for them, and then hold them accountable for that. What we find is that most of our practitioners really do want to do and intend to do a very excellent job for their clients. But if they don't have the resources to understand what is involved in that job, then there's sort of a wash, and we're trying to close that gap. We don't know if this 0.1% is outrageously ambitious or not. You know, it's just sort of a pick in the dark. But that comes down to three people a year in terms of public discipline. And as you look at the bottom half of that page, and then page 10, you'll see how many complaints and how many public disciplines we have, in fact, taken the last several years. The board is not at all shy about taking public discipline when that's the appropriate course of action, because public protection is still our primary goal. Page 11, you'll see that we exceeded our goal for customer service, and in fact, we are requesting an increase in the goal level. We had set 95% as the goal and exceeded that easily, and so we're setting it at 98%. We're not sure if we can actually meet that or not, especially with all of the extra phone calls we've gotten around the birth month renewal and the process about that. We expect that will go down a little bit this year, but hopefully we'll then recoup. But we think 98% is an appropriate goal. So I ask you to consider that. Starting with page 12, we'll look at some of the programs and services accomplished by the board. We've already talked a little bit about the Consumer Protection Committee and that important program of the board. And in Appendix C, you'll see the complaint packet we send out when somebody calls in saying, you know, I don't think I've been treated fairly, and well, this is the complaint packet we send out, along with some other forms that relate to that whole process. On page 13, we talk about the Impaired Professional Program, and I need to take just a moment of time to update you on that, because that committee has spent enormous time this last 2 years developing an incredible program. The last two and a half years, they've worked very hard to develop a program agreement that the board enters into with professionals that are impaired for whatever reason. What we did is we looked at other impaired professional programs here in the state by dentistry or pharmacology or some of the other boards, as well as other social work boards across the state. And we gleaned what we could from all of those to develop our own program. From that program, we developed the agreement. And you'll notice in Appendix D, the entire agreement. When you have a chance to look at D, you know, the agreement is there. It's 7 pages of the legal language that needs to be there for an agreement. But I would invite you especially to look at the yellow page after the agreement, which is the guts of the program. When a person enters into an agreement with the Impaired Professional Program, we specify, for example, if there's a chemical dependency issue going on, we specify, okay, we expect you, we require you to go to this many 12-step programs a month or a week. We require you to have a sponsor. We require you to be in this kind of therapy. We require a report from the therapist. We require a report from you. We require random UAs. We require whatever is appropriate for the level of problem and severity of the problem, so that we can ensure as much as possible that that person is still publicly practicing in a safe manner for constituents. This model of Impaired Professional Program was highlighted at the recent Association of Social Work Boards national meeting this past April as one of the models in the whole country for other boards, and we've received lots of calls from other small and medium-sized licensing boards that have gotten copies of our work and are using it. On page 14, we refer to the application program. And in Appendix F, you have both application for people that are coming into state that are already licensed in some other jurisdiction or people that are going through licensure for the first time here. But I would call your attention especially to Appendix E. Appendix E is the list of questions that we have on every application form and every renewal form every year that asks people, have you had a DUII since the last report? Have you had a suit that is practice-related? Have you been in an inpatient mental health institution since you last reported? You know, have you had problems that would impair your ability to safely function as a clinical social worker in the state of Oregon? We ask that of every applicant every year in the renewal form, and we act on the responses that we get. On page 15 is the renewal packet itself, and Appendix G contains a normal renewal packet along with a CE form that gets reported on every other year on an odd and even basis. In terms of policy packages, there are just a few for your consideration this time. First of all, Policy Package 100 relates to one of the laws that you're looking at in terms of confirming the packages that were approved by the 2005 legislature and then were administratively adopted by the board since you last met. These are both minor increases in the annual renewal fee, first of all for LCSWs from $75 to $90, and for clinical social work associates from $55 to $60. 2 years ago, when we made that request and you approved it, that still put us at the bottom of the poll for associate levels. We're still charging the least amount in terms of annual renewal fee, and we are next to the bottom in terms of annual renewal fee for other health-related licensing boards. If for some reason you choose not to confirm this, you'll notice on the second bullet that that will put us almost $81,000 in the hole in terms of expected revenue and make it very challenging, if not impossible, for the board to be able to accomplish its function effectively and thoroughly as we have in the past. Policy Package 102 on page 17 relates to that half-person additional office specialist one that I referred to earlier. You'll notice in that first bullet the primary functions that we're asking that person and expecting that person to do, which would then free up our administrative specialist two people. We have one and a half administrative specialist two people to be able to do their jobs more effectively and thoroughly and in a more timely fashion of processing those complaints, of handling the applications and the renewals like they do so well. Policy Package 103 relates to out-of-state travel funds for the board. We've requested an $8,000 increase in that line item of the budget, and it relates directly to the Association of Social Work Boards' annual spring continuing education meeting. Those meetings are not for licensed clinical social workers to help them be a better licensed clinical social worker and understand how to diagnose bipolar or any of those other mental health issues. The meetings are definitely for board members who regulate social workers to help them understand how to be a better board member in that very important place in state government. Because the meeting was in Portland this last April, 5 out of the 7 board members were able to attend because it didn't cost us too much. We didn't have to send them to Kansas City or Baltimore or wherever else. It was just down the road. And they were staying with friends or relatives or living in Portland themselves. And so 5 of the 7 did get to go. Before that, historically, we've always sent one board member. Occasionally, we've been able to afford to send two. Always in the past, that one or two board members have come back and said, these are the handouts, those are the great training, and it was. But this time, when 5 of the 7 got to hear it themselves firsthand, it was a totally different experience. Because not only do you get to hear firsthand what they're talking about in terms of ethics, but then over lunch, you get to talk to the person from Florida, or Maryland, or Massachusetts, or Nevada, and say, how did your board actually deal with that? You know, do you define it that way? And that is incredibly important cross-referencing for board members. So they all came back saying, we've all got to go to these all the time. Now, as we came forward with this package and working with the BAM analyst and the LFO analyst, what you're going to be getting from the LFO analyst is a recommendation to keep the $8,000 but to split it in half, putting half of it into out-of-state travel and half of it into in-state travel, because the reality is we're spending more in in-state travel than we had budgeted for, and we'll keep on doing so. And so that would sort of true up that as well as give us some additional funds. The chances are of all board members attending any spring training is pretty minimal anyway, just because of their schedules. And this will give us enough to send most of them anyway. So we're in total agreement with that LFO recommendation that you'll be receiving. We do hope that you keep the $8,000 there, and we will split it into half. And then finally, packages 106, 7, and 8, I've already referred to in terms of office efficiency. These are lessons we've learned since we've gone to birth month renewal, some glitches that we need to straighten up in terms of administrative functioning to pair up the initial licensure cost and the renewal cost so they are identical and not different, so our staff doesn't time and time again have to explain that there's a difference and why there's a difference, as well as to bring the annual renewal fee for LCSWs so it equates to an even dollar amount and doesn't wind up with a 50 cents on the end, because some of our licensees either don't see that or don't understand that, and that just creates headaches for us administratively and a nightmare in terms of paperwork. So we do hope that you do support those three policy packages as well. And that concludes my brief run through those 19 pages. Obviously, if you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Langenwalter. I just mispronounced your name. Can you pronounce your last name for me?
Langenwalter.
Langenwalter.
Or whatever's close.
No, no. Okay. Believe me, I can relate. So, Senator Devlin.
Mr. Langenwald.
Yes.
When you were explaining the differences between your licensing board and other licensing board and that principal distinction in terms of you being able to regulate the board, being able to regulate the use of the title, and I've talked to a lot of social workers who have the title and they actually prize having the title, so they don't really want to give it up.
Right.
But the reality of that, if I was to compare it to like the board of psychologists, is if the board of psychologists finds that a practicing psychologist has done something that really questions whether or not they should ever practice again, they can deny that party that practice. Is that correct?
That's
right. In your case, while you can make various efforts, the person could turn around, have an existing client base, some do, and simply call themselves a social worker.
Yes. Representative Glezio, Senator Devlin, a little over an hour ago, I was on a phone to a gentleman in the Portland area. About 5 years ago now, the board revoked the license of a Leo Munter, who used to be a licensed clinical social worker. That license was revoked because of dual relationship and sexual misconduct with client base. He is now serving as an expert social work witness to the Multnomah County in the court system up there over child custody issues. The client had just found out about the public discipline. You know, there's nothing the boy can now do. He's no longer underneath our jurisdiction. There's nothing anybody can do about it other than the client is going to be making sure that his lawyer lets the judge know and the county know that they are now working with the person who had his license revoked by the board because of unethical practice. That puts us at a disadvantage, but not being able to close that gap.
This was not a planted question either. I mean,
okay, I'm sorry.
I said you didn't plant this question.
Oh, no. I didn't plant the phone call either.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make your case for you that there is an issue here.
There is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions.
Absolutely. Sure.
The 356 hours of vacation and compensatory time on your staff, does that include sick leave as well?
Chair and Senator Morse, no, that is just vacation time and compensatory time, not sick leave or personal business. That's not included in there either. It's just those two categories.
Okay. And then a question or a comment more than a question, looking at your key performance measure number 3, statement that you'd be taking an ambitious goal of taking public action against 0.1% of your license base in any given fiscal year, and the goal is to take public action against not more than 3 licensees per fiscal year, which indicates it's more metric driven than need driven. And I'm curious why you would say that, make a statement that you would take not action against not more than 3.
Okay. Chairperson and Senator Morris, I'll try and respond, and if I'm not making sense, please keep asking. It's not that we don't want to take action more than 3 times. We will gladly take the action that's necessary. If it's 20 times, we'll take 20 actions in a year if that's really what's needed to protect the public. But what we're trying to do is be more proactive and provide for the licensee base, for example, in the child custody evaluation genre, what really is best practice so that they can know what is expected of them out there in the field and what the standard is that we are expecting. If they don't meet that standard, then they are at higher risk for having public action taken against their license. Right now, they don't have that in many key areas of the social work practice. And so we wind up being reactive and saying, yeah, you should have known better than do that. And there really wasn't anything that told them that. So we're trying to be more proactive. The 0.1% was just looking at, we had been taking 3 to 4 actions a year was sort of the historic thing. Some years 5, some years none. And I was just trying to find a ballpark figure that made sense.
Mr. Chair, okay. I understand your intent. The wording could probably be improved a bit.
Certainly.
Mr. Langenwalter, our LFO analyst, Deborah Matthew, has a clarifying question she'd like to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Langenwalder, we talked about this very issue when we reviewed your performance measures against the criteria. And so is this trying to get at, say you did find yourself taking a lot of actions against your licensee base, are you saying then that you would use that information then to revamp the information that you make available to your licensees to try to address those issues that you were seeing recurring?
And yes.
So what this tells you in terms of managing is that you're doing a pretty good job of getting information out there to your licensees about what best practices are, but if you started to see a problem area, then you would take action to try to correct that.
Yes. Chair and Ms. Banthi, that's correct. And that's why you have the information not only for the public actions we've taken, but all of the complaints that we've had by genre. The other thing that we're looking at is records keeping, as inane as that sounds. That is a problem for a lot of licensees. We've had a lot of complaints. And so we're in the process now of developing some protocols. This is what we really expect to have in a record. It's especially crucial in terms of if there's a sudden impairment or death of a licensee, and that whole licensee's base needs to be handed over to somebody else. Somebody else needs to look at that chart and be able to pick up the next day with that client base and carry on. And if the charts aren't there, then there's a real problem for the client. So, you know, we look at where the problems are and are trying to be proactive.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of comments, and maybe I'll state them that way and ask for a response. It strikes me that having three-quarters of the complaints that you receive closed within 6 months is a pretty good result, seeing that any serious matter is by definition going to be open longer than that. By the time you've dealt with a contested case and all of those kinds of things, unless someone just fesses up at once and moves along. And I also note that on page 10 that you apparently have had some pretty significant issues come up this year, in the past year. Nine totaling sexual involvement and professional conduct alone. I mean, a pretty significant number of those, which of course you can't predict, and you have to act upon. It occurs to me that perhaps on the issue that Senator Morris raised, that you may want to reword that to talk about actions taken by the board taking public action in connection with matters that can be dealt with through a more thorough continuing education process. Everyone knows that they shouldn't be involved with sex with patients. Presumably most people understand too that dual relationships are not acceptable, and probably no amount of continuing education is going to help you with those cases. You might want to exclude them from the number that you're working toward on key performance measure number 3.
Yeah.
Just a suggestion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As someone who has founded and runs a market research-based consulting firm, I have a couple of comments. First of all, in terms of the complaint issue that's been raised by a couple of my colleagues, I would just say that 26 complaints and similar numbers for previous years is not a sample size even significant enough to run statistical testing, so the percentages would vary dramatically based on a couple of cases. Secondly, I'm just curious about the methodology used to gather the data on page 11, that is the customer service related metrics.
Okay. Chair Glizio, Representative Edwards. This past year, we've used the state developed questionnaires with the basic overall service and then the five subsets underneath that were developed by Department of Administrative Services. Before that, for many years, the board has always done its own, you know, sort of 1 through 5, how well do you like this kind of thing. But with the last year, we did coincide with the state requested or required thing, and so the figures are new this time in relationship to that. I'm not sure what other boards are using in terms of their goals for that, but ours came out the way they did.
Chair, follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So is the methodology a random sample, or is it? Does everyone who is licensed receive a survey?
Yes, Chair and Representative. In the renewal process, everybody under the board's jurisdiction who renews each year, it's just part of the renewal form. And those five questions or six questions, and they mark off yes or no, and we put that into the computer, and off we go. We are looking for a way, and I think our computer consultant now has a way, for people who visit our website to also then chime in, or people that call the office. If I have their email address, I'll send them something saying that we do an okay job. But that's still in the development. Stage. Right now it's just the licensees.
One final follow-up, Mr. Chair. So is it mandatory that they fill out this portion?
Chair and Representative Edwards, no, it is not. It's voluntary. We hope that they do, but some choose not to.
Okay. One final comment then. So I would just recommend going forward when reporting these figures that you indicate that it's a self-selected sample. And indicate the sample size as well as the scale for the questions. I assume that this is, if it's a 5-point scale, that the figures represented here are the top two box.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Excellent points. Further questions from committee? Okay, excellent. Mr. Langenwalter, thank you very much. Unless you had any final comments that you wanted to make.
Thank you for your time and interest and hopefully your support for our requests.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, now I noticed there are a couple folks in the back, and at this time we can take, if there are any members of the public who want to testify on House Bill 5007 and 5008, you would want to come up and fill out your name. It looks like that's not the case. Very good. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bills 5007 and 5008. And now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bills 5009 and 5010, the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And I'm recognizing Dave McTeague, the Executive Director of the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And I see you have some colleagues. I don't have all the names down here, but
thank
Mr.
you.
McTeague,
thank you.
The floor is yours.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee, my name is Dave McTeague. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Our office is in South Salem. With me is a vice chair of our Board of Chiropractic, Dr. Michael Vissers, a chiropractic physician from Canby, Oregon. And our newest member of the Board of Examiners from here in Salem is Dr. Steve Koch, who practices down overlooking the river. The Board of Chiropractic Examiners is a small, standalone state agency responsible for licensing and regulation of chiropractic assistants and certified chiropractic physicians. Our board consists of five chiropractic physicians and two public members, and we're at full strength now, finally. The board has 4.5 FTE staff, including two administrative specialists, one full-time investigator, and myself as the executive director. At present, we have 1,273 chiropractic physicians with an active license, which is a 30% increase since 1999. And we have 343 chiropractic physicians with an inactive license. We have 883 certified chiropractic assistants, and that program has been exploding, which is more than doubled since 1999.
Mr. McTeague, can I interrupt you for a second? This is more just instruction of the committee. In the last couple of weeks, we've been doing a lot of informational hearings, and I had asked the committee members to hold their questions to the end. I would say at this point, feel free to
to jump in at any time. So, pardon me, Mr. McTeague. I just wanted to make sure that people was clear on that. I'd forgotten to say that. So, thank you. Proceed.
Like most regulatory boards, our primary mission is public protection. The Board of Chiropractic Examiners decided some years ago to be more of a proactive board and also promote quality within the profession. We have a strategic plan, which is reviewed in each part of which is reviewed at every board meeting, and is currently up to date. Our major activity is dealing with, besides licensing and continuing education and answering a plethora of policy and practice questions from attorneys, patients, consumers, and doctors on a regular basis, we have a steady flow of complaints which require investigations and peer review committee deliberations, which is another investigative arm of the board, and then board deliberations. And this includes the possibility of contested case hearings, a lot of assistant attorney general involvement, which includes negotiations, writing proposed orders, and then final disciplinary actions. And this also includes ongoing monitoring of probation requirements. Over half of every Board of Chiropractic meeting is dedicated to complaint review in executive session. And I provided you our ongoing summary of our complaint statistics along with 2 years detail on final actions by the board, so you can see some of the kind of issues that we're running into. In January 2006, we were able to expand our criminal background checks for doctor chiropractic applicants to include the National FBI database as authored by legislation passed in 2005 session. We also conduct Oregon Judicial Information, also known as OJIN, checks on chiropractic assistant applicants. House Bill 5008, I saw a little overlap on the House Bill numbers there. I have a bill that says 5008 is the Board of Chiropractic fee bill. And so that's our Senate Bill 3338.
I might note that in perusing the bill, we actually have the bill numbers backwards.
On the agenda, that is.
On the agenda?
Yes.
And that's why the confusion that 5008 refer to chiropractic, 5009, 5010 refer to social work.
Well, thank you for pointing that out.
And we want to make sure you amend the right bill now. So.
Yes. We apologize. Thank you for pointing that out.
5008 is the Senate Bill 333 reauthorization or authorization for hopefully the last time of the board's existing $52 fee for a doctor of chiropractic applicant background check, which covers our costs. That was the legislation from last time. And roughly 95% of all proposed disciplinary actions are settled through negotiations, although sometimes, as you know, we know, we almost go to contested case hearing, and we've spent a tremendous amount of attorney time and board time on a case, and then it settles. So the whole contested case process is kind of a continuum of issuing a notice of proposed disciplinary action, and sometimes it's not contested, settles right away. Sometimes negotiations drag on for a long time. Sometimes we get ready to go to hearing. The attorney spends hours and hours preparing the trial documents for the hearing, and then boom, then it settles. So, but still, most of it's done through a dispute resolution process. But we have to be ready for the contested case if and when it comes. And we had one this last biennium, and it was a real doozy. It was a sexual misconduct case in which violations were determined concerning the doctor's mistreatment of 10 female patients. The case was 3 years in the making. The doctor's license was revoked in August following a five-day contested case hearing in June. And the total cost for our legal bills, administrative law judge, expert witnesses, totaled $43,503, and this doesn't include the value of staff time and the investigators' work on this case over an extended period of time. We almost went to hearing on a second revocation case, but the board chose to settle that for an alternative, but severe disciplinary sanction, 6-month suspension, 10-year probation, $20,000 civil penalty. If we'd gone to hearing on that case and had a 3 or 4 day contested case hearing, we would have used up most of our remaining available reserve of unexpended agency funds, or a very large portion of it. And so that's why we asked for policy package 101 to speak to our need for additional resources, primarily for potential contested case costs, ongoing legal costs, investigations, and then LFO is proposing some adjustments in some other categories like in-state travel and publications where we've been going over the allotment, the budgeted amount from last session, and we're okay with all those adjustments that are being, that will be brought forward. Key performance measures number 1 and 2 speak to the time complaints are open overall, similar to the discussion you had with the Social Workers Board on our first performance measure. Our case average lengthened to 217 days overall, and that was largely affected. And our goal is to try and stay on average at 180 days or less. And that was a largely a result of the big case I just mentioned, because eight of those 11 complainants, those complaints were open for quite some time. We had some peer review committee deliberation and cases that were open for quite a while before they finally resolved. It's funny how when attorneys get involved in these proceedings and negotiations, things kind of tend to drag on a little bit longer. That's our experience, anyway, of course. And this again speaks to our need for policy package number 101. When we ask for additional dollars, it is our hope that it means we'll have the capacity in the reserve to meet the needs if they arise. If they don't arise, we're okay with not spending the money. So it's important, as a small licensing board, engage in this kind of a process, we will every so often face these balloon costs, and we need to know that the board needs to know that we have the capacity to go to hearing if it is required by the circumstances in that particular case. We hope to improve our performance measure results on our first measure in 2007. In 2005, the numbers were very good, and so I think perhaps we were a little, if you average it out, we look a little better, but that's one of my goals for 2007, is to get that performance measure back in the zone where I want it to be. Another initiative of the board over many years, and we hope to continue work on that in this biennium, is to work on the next chapter of the educational manual for evidence-based chiropractic, and we hope to finish our patient safety chapter and begin work on a health promotion and wellness chapter. And this is a consensus process that involves a lot of doctors in the state, and it's and the idea is to create a document that will be helpful to doctors and to patients, and also it's part of a productive internal dialogue that the profession can have on some important issues. I've addressed performance measures 1 and 2. Performance measure number 3, the data is in your binder on beginning on pages 13 and then 14. Performance measure number 3, we're doing okay with this one, though the numbers are of course very small. We're trying to promote a rehabilitative approach, and we are trying to involve with appropriate times doctors in a mentoring program. We currently have two mentoring programs in place, and we're now beginning a third one for doctors who need the assistance of another professional to help correct some problems in their practice. In performance number four, we would like to rewrite the language of this measure, not change the measure, but rewrite the language so we reflect it as positive numbers instead of negative numbers. And we realized the need for this when we tried to make a chart, and the chart wasn't working with the negative numbers. And I have an example of how this displays better as a chart in the report that follows on page 33. And our compliance numbers with that performance measure are very good. We do a random check for continuing education compliance every year, and we're at like 98% on the first check. So we're satisfied that our continuing education program is working well, and people are complying. Performance measure number five addresses the program I just mentioned of the educational manual and existing document known as the Oregon Chiropractic Practices and Utilization Guideline. We're trying to measure our use of these documents. The old language just really wasn't quite broad enough, we thought, average doctor doesn't pull this document off the shelf whenever they're looking at a specific patient case, is I think what we realized. But they are using our documents as a general reference point. So we decided we should probably try and make that a broader measure of does this get referred to in the last year, as opposed to tying it to three specific cases. And performance measure number six is the same for all small agencies, and we initiated an online survey tool, which is linked to our web page, in November. So the numbers we have here are it's a relatively small sample, but we expect in 2007 we'll have a much larger sample.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. In relationship to performance measure, who is your customers that you're referring to here?
Our chiropractic physicians really use a lot of our services, so they're the ones that we probably interact with the most. Chiropractic assistants, of course, all our licensees we interact with. Applicants for those two license categories, but beyond that, we have patients who call us with information. We have people who filed complaints who want to follow up with how is that complaint they filed progressing. We have credentialing services.
Do you distinguish between those consumers versus member?
My sample wouldn't be big enough to do that yet, but at some point we could if we had a large enough sample. This sample was about two-thirds chiropractic physician responding to this, because they're the ones that probably check our web page the most frequently.
Okay. And if I just think a C grade of 75% is probably fairly modest. I don't know who set that as the target. I would probably like to see a higher target than that, if it were me, but just an observation.
Yeah, but these are new, and I think I don't know that anybody has actually specified to us what that target should be, and it seemed like that was a reasonable place to start, but we'll take that under consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
I've included the prioritized list of services, which for a small agency like us was kind of challenging to try and list out, because basically
Well, we have several programs, our public protection program, our licensing and continuing education, and then interaction with the public, policy and practice questions, and then board support. And so we broke those out kind of as best we could, just to more or less paint a picture. And as far as quality and efficiency improvement, we have already made our transition to birth month licensing, and we put a lot of effort into improving our web page. That's an ongoing project, and now the state is taking us through yet another upgrade of the overall look of the state web pages. And a major project underway presently is we want to put all our disciplinary orders up on the web. We have a licensee lookup on the web now that indicates if a licensee has a disciplinary action, and then they can contact us and get that action. But we're going to create a method to have that available on the page, so people doing license checks, license verifications, and want to find out what that disciplinary history is will be able to see that there is an action, go to the year that has that, and then they'll be able to download at least the final order, and possibly also the proposed action, as well as the final outcome order as well. And I'd like to have Dr. Visser say anything about what you'd like to say at this point.
Well, I would say that I spent a little time on the
jury. Dr. Visser, can you just state your name?
Yeah, Dr. Michael Visser, chiropractor, Camby. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on the board for a little over a year and a half, and I served on the peer review committee before. And I think that the board's main focus this last few years has been public protection, which is dealing with our regulatory function of licensees that have complaints. One of the difficulties that comes up is when we want to be able to decide without outside things actually influencing our decisions, which would be, do we have money to go forward on contested case hearing? And so I think that's one of the reasons that I think it's important to consider our request. The other thing that we've really done, I think, a good job on is we have requested all of our new, where it's required, all of our new licensees to attend an orientation meeting with the board. It accomplishes a few things. One is they actually get to meet us personally, so they're not thinking that we're some, you know, board that sits up. But also it helps us to address some of the areas that we're seeing the most complaints in. And the second part of that is the educational manual, which we're coming out with. Doctor-patient relationships were a big problem in the past, so we addressed that. Record-keeping was our latest chapter that we passed. We had a lot of bookkeeping, and not bookkeeping, but charting complaints over the years. So we're really working hard on trying to address those issues. So,
thank you.
Mr. McTeague, are you?
Are you concluded? We're willing to answer any more questions.
Okay, well, that will work. Do we have any questions for Mr. McTeague? Senator Devlin.
Mr. McTeague, you missed the legislature.
I don't think that was a rhetorical question.
My current job is a lot like being in the legislature. Like, I have constituents calling me all the time about, you name it. So, but it's all about chiropractic. So,
Senator Decker.
Chair, I have a little more difficult question than that. So there was a controversy or an issue that was rather large 4 or 5 years ago with the Board of Chiropractic Examiners and who was the composition of the board. And so how has that, and my recall was there was two different camps, if that's an accurate description, and wanted representation on your board. How has that worked itself out?
Actually, there's two different associations. We just recently had the only board member from the one association, ODOC, Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic, resign from the board. In most of our evaluation and interviewing of applicants for either the peer review committee or the other committees or the board itself, we try to take into account diversity, be it gender, association, all the different things. So at the present time, I don't believe we have an ODOC member on the board, but it's not for lack of trying, so we would like their interaction, and their one member just happened to resign. So Steve Coe is our new member, but normally at that time we do ask the associations to put forward names into the governor's office. So
we've had some success in recruitment of both from all points of view for our committees, and that's really how we develop our board talent. Both the Dr. Visser and Dr. Koch served on the board's peer review committee, so that's the pipeline that we're trying to get the talent and the diversity into, and we've had some success with that. So I think you'll see some of those folks show up on the board in coming years.
I will say that you'll probably notice that the associations are working a lot closer and together in the legislative arena. You'll see that this year. There's actually starting to be a little bit of movement from both associations towards the middle and working together as opposed to fighting each other, so that's good.
You see in our newsletter, we got them to sit still long enough the other day to take a picture of both of the association leaders.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
So we've made progress.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, so what was the nature of that dispute, or the nature of the dispute between the two associations?
That was before my time, so you can answer that.
I think there's some different philosophies within chiropractic, and one group didn't feel like they were represented enough in the process, so we've had to try and work on those issues.
Okay, I learned nothing by that, but maybe I'll ask you.
There's a mixer aspect to this.
Yeah, I think there's different philosophies in chiropractic treatment itself. And then there's also, I noticed, since being on the board, there's a different philosophy of what the board's supposed to be doing. I believe that the board is supposed to be public protection number one. But there's a segment of chiropractors that think that the board should represent them in front of insurance companies. We should be getting involved in mercury in the water and all these different things that are patient, you know, protection but it's not our legislative intent. So I think that's where some of the friction comes in, is what is the board supposed to be doing and are we doing it?
Okay. Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The number of licensees that you had in the 05-07 legislative adopted budget, how does that compare to the licensees that you're projecting in 07-09?
On page 4 of the narrative, if you go back to January 18, 2005, 2 years ago, we had 1,185 actively licensed chiropractic physicians in Oregon, and now we're up to 1,274. So what we see is a real steady increase. We gave a state exam last Friday. We had 35 people taking our state tests. So in Western States Chiropractic College in Portland has a very good reputation as a chiropractic college, and they keep churning out, you know, future chiropractors, and a lot of them want to stay in Oregon. And so our numbers just have been on a steady upward growth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions?
Fantastic. Well, first, before you leave, I just wanted to thank Dr. Vissers and Dr. Cope, not only for showing up today and taking your time out, but more importantly for serving on the board. Your remuneration is not enormous. In fact, it's nothing.
So $30 a day.
Oh, okay.
It's a great education, though.
It's good. No,
it's
so
a pleasure.
But on behalf of the committee and people of Oregon, wanted to thank you for your service. Really appreciate it, and appreciate you taking the time to come down. And Mr. McTeague, if you have any final comments, well, we thank you very much.
Good bill should pass.
Good bill should pass. All right. Well, before we go, if there are any members of the public who wish to testify, we did not see anyone signed up, so I just wanted to give that final opportunity. I don't know if Mr. Chandler wants to testify on that.
No, I'm up there and see if he says anything.
Okay, all right. Well, just for clarification, I originally opened a public hearing on House Bill 5009 and 5010, and then we soon found out that those were not the chiropractic bills. So I think what I'm doing is I'm actually going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5007, 5008, and with that, the committee's adjourned.